So, you know, where we had left things off is, you know, this kind of just very dark moment, but literally, you know, it says that they were traveling through the night, and Shaul's terrified, he's surrounded by the Plishtim, and he has no way of communicating with somebody to give him some sense of security, because Shmuel is dead, and David, of course, is now with the Plishtim. And God is not responding, and he's killed off all the Kohanim, so he can't ask through the Urim V'Tumim anyway. So it's this very macabre situation where you have Shaul seeking out the necromancers. Remember, he had led the campaign against the necromancy, Ov and Yidoni, which are closely related forms of necromancy. And this woman, the Eshes Baalas Ov, so she figures out, once Shmuel comes from the dead, that she's actually dealing with Shaul. So that's where we had left off last week. So let's take a look. Vatomer Isha, this is just to review the last few verses that we saw. Esmia Lelach, who should I conjure for you? Vayomer, and he says, as Shmuel Halili. So I want to speak to Shmuel. So Vatera Haisha et Shmuel, so she actually sees Shmuel, Vatizak Bekol Gadol. So notice it's not vatitzak, but vatizak with the Zion, which connotes the sense of like primal fear. She, and this is, you know, so to speak, what she does, right, as a vocation. So she shouldn't be so shocked, but she's horrified by this. And there's this extensive rabbinic literature, you know, that normally, you know, during necromancy, they came feet up and he comes head up. And she's just very disoriented, very alarmed, almost panicked by this scene. Vatomer Haishal Shaul Lemor Lama Rimitani Vyata Shaul. She figured out that Shmuel would only sort of emerge from the dead to speak to the king of Israel. Vayomer Lahamelech Al Tiri Kima Ra'it. Just tell me what you see. I'm not here, you know, to enforce my own law. Vatomer Haishal Shaul Elohim Ro'iti Olim Min Ha'aretz. So she says to Shaul, I see an image of God, so to speak, coming up from the ground. So Vayomer La Mataro, but what is this image of a man that you see? Vatomer Ish Zakenole, he's very, very old. He's actually dead. Okay? Ish Zakenole. Vihu Otem Me'il, he's wearing this Me'il. You remember that the scenes, it's going back to last year, the very beginning of Sefer Shmuel, when Chana would prepare the Me'il for Shmuel, right? And as he would grow, she would, you know, prepare a new one on an annual basis. So it's kind of this really haunting image of Shmuel, who looks really old. He's actually dead. And he's wearing the clothes that he wore when he was a child. It's kind of a haunting thing to think about. Very creepy, actually, to think about somebody who's no longer living dressed in the clothes of their youth, but Vayeda Shaul ki Shmuel hu, that was the siman muvhak, that was the dead giveaway, no pun intended. Vayikod apay marta vayishtachu, and Shaul bows down. So Shmuel, you know, sort of picks up where he left off during his lifetime, and excoriates Shaul. Vayomer Shmuel Shaul, lama hir gaztani, lehargiz in modern Hebrew is to annoy, to anger, like rogues. Lama hir gaztani, and Shaul says, I wouldn't have done it unless I was desperate. I'm in deep distress. Plishtim nilchamim bi, the Plishtim have surrounded me. Velohim sarme alai, and God is nowhere to be found. Velo anani od gam biyad hanevi'im, there are no prophets for me to turn to. Gam b'chalomot, God won't even appear in a dream to me. And I want to know what to do. Should I fight the Plishtim? Should I run away? What should I do? So why are you asking me? If God has deserted you, then you deserve to be deserted. Now God is your enemy, or the Targum Yonasan says it a little bit differently, that God now supports the one who is your enemy, meaning David. Vayas Hashem lo, Kasher diber biadi, as I told you, vayikra Hashem es hamelacha miyadecha, God is taking the monarchy away from you, vayitna l'reyacha leDavid, and he's giving it to David. Kasher lo shamata bekol Hashem, v'lo asisa charona po ba'amalek. And why is this happening? As I told you back in chapter 15, because you did not fulfill God's will in the war against Amalek. Al kein hadavar hazeh asalacha Hashem hayom hazeh. And now God is making good, so to speak, on that promise. Now, interesting point. Remember, what is David doing right now, exactly at this time? David is pretending to be, right, a member of Achish's court, that he's abandoned the Jewish people. But in reality, he's a double agent because he's leading raids on a daily basis against Amalek. So here you have this fascinating dichotomy. Shaul is being brought to justice for failing to follow the divine mandate against Amalek. Meanwhile, David, his replacement, without even being told to do so, is waging war against Amalek, right? That's literally what's happening in real time. Vayitein Hashem gam et Yisrael imcha biyad plishtim. So not only are you in deep trouble, but the Jewish people are going to be defeated. Umachar is ominous. Ata uvanecha imi. You and all of your sons will be with me. Shmuel's dead, so that means what it means. Gam et machane Yisrael yitein Hashem biyad plishtim. It's going to be a national disaster. Vayimaher Shaul, and Shaul collapses. Vayipol meloko mato arza, and he falls down on the ground. Now here, this is a critical image, because remember, we're introduced to Shaul, and he is mishechmo v'mala gavoa mikolam, right? And now his full height is literally on the ground. And all of the factors are conspiring together, right? Where is he? He's seeing the Eshet Balad Ov. And Shaul had, you know, tried to uproot all of that from Jewish society. And Shaul was the one who physically was the most admirable member. He was the clearly most striking, handsome member of Jewish society. Mishchmo v'mal gavo mikolam. Now he's on the ground. Vayira me'od midivrei Shmuel. Gam koach lo hayavo, he had no strength in him. Kilo achal lechem kol hayom v'chol halayla, he had been fasting. V'tavo ha'ishal Shaul. So this woman, I mean, you can imagine the scene. It's actually even hard to imagine the scene where the king of Israel is collapsed on the floor of her house, dressed up. Remember that we read last week, he's in disguise, because how could he be seen going to the, you know, Eshet Balat Ov, right? I mean, you know, like that's, you know, unthinkable. And she sees what's going on, this woman. Vatera ki nivhal me'od. She saw that he was in a state of panic. Vatomer ilav, hinei shema shivchatcha bekolecha. I listened to you. I followed your request. You wanted to speak to Shmuel. Vasim nafshi bechapi. And in so doing, right, I was risking my life because, you know, you've enforced this as a capital crime. Vayashma tevarecha sher dibarte ilai. And I listened to you. But now listen to me. I want you to eat something. I want you to have strength when you leave. In other words, the way I understand this, she doesn't want Shaul to be seen this way. This is like the total, the image that comes to mind for those who have read it from Shakespeare, King Lear. Just want the people to see the king so debased. It's a national travesty. It's like the Rambam talks about the king, you know, libo hu lev kol akal, that he still represents something. You know, when all is said and done, he's still, as David would himself say, the Mashiach Hashem. He can't be seen this way. It's a matter of national honor. And she impresses upon Shaul the importance of his eating, at least. Vayimain, vayomer lo uchal, he can't eat anything. And it's hard to blame him after the news that he got. Vayifritzu vo avadav, the two men that are with Shaul that accompanied him on this journey, they press him. Vegam ha'isha, and she continues to push him to eat something. Vayishma l'kolam, he relents. Vayakom meha'aretz, and he gets up off the ground. Vayeshev el hamita, and he sits on the bed. So she happened to have a calf in the home. She slaughters it for Shaul. A lot of the language here is actually exactly the same that you find at the beginning of Parshas Vayera, from the cow and the fact that she's baking. It's what Avram and Sarah prepared for the guests. Very fascinating biblical parallel here. Vatofehu matzot. Right. Remember, the tradition was that those malachim came to Avram on Pesach. Right. When they go to Lot, remember that Lot actually gives them, matzot afava yochelu. So there's clearly some parallel here to think about. But of course, the news here couldn't be any more different. There, the news is that Avram and Sarah are miraculously going to be given life, a child. Here, the news is that Shaul is going to die, he and his family. They go, and this, of course, will be the last night of Shaul's life. So, you know, the text. Yeah, Shiggy, go ahead. It's a very fascinating interpretation, you know, because there's this very long essay the Radak has as to whether or not we think that this was like an apparition, like a dream, or is there anything real about what transpired? I mean, and the Radak tends to think that no, like that actually, you know, there is this, you know, dark wisdom of necromancy. But it's interesting what you're saying, that it sounds like something that Shaul himself would be dreaming, like a nightmare, really. It's a fascinating interpretation. So again, it's extremely dark. It's obviously very ominous with respect to Machara Tauvanecha Imi. But what's really interesting, I think, is that the rabbinic tradition here, in two very different ways, but in very thought-provoking ways, sees the possibility of redemption for Shaul in the message that Shmuel gives him. In other words, if you read Shmuel's message to him, it basically says, why are you bothering me? God deserted you for a good reason, and you're going to die, and the Jewish people are going to be slaughtered by the Plishtim. So, like, you know, I don't think I would be exaggerating if I would say that was, like, a little bit, you know, of a rough message, right? You know, that's the way the text reads. But there's two different ways the rabbis looked very carefully at the text here, and they highlight some really subtle points, but really worth considering in terms of Shmuel perhaps presenting Shaul with a path towards redemption. Now again, it's still pretty gory, but just take a look here for a second. So let's take a look at the second source. This is from the Gemara in Brachos. Amar Rabba Bar Chanan Asaba Mishmei Rav, Kol Osa Davar Aveiro Mizvayish Bo, anybody who does something wrong but is genuinely embarrassed about it, Mochel Noa Kol Avon Osav, not only is that sin forgiven, but somehow the person is forgiven all their sins. Mehacha, what's the proof? Vayomer Shmuel Al Shaul, Lama Hirgaztani Lodoti, why did you bother me? Vayomer Shaul, so Shaul explains, I was desperate. Sarli ma'od, plishtim do chamimbi, v'ashem sar me'alai, v'lo anani od, gam b'yad ha'nevi'im, the prophets aren't answering me, gam b'chalomot, not in dreams, v'akra l'cha, I was desperate, so I called you, l'hodieni ma'asai, I look to you for direction. V'ilu, but what words did Shaul not say, that frankly did come up earlier in the chapter, when Shaul is trying to explain why he wants to commune with this Eshet Baalat Ov, V'ilu Urim V'tumim Lo Ka'amar. He never mentions that other track, going through the Kohanim, the Urim V'tumim. So the Gemara says, Mishum Dekatle Nov Yer HaKohanim, he had slaughtered all of the innocent people of Nov, all the Kohanim there. Uminayin Dachilu Lemin Shemaya, and how do we know that because he was so embarrassed about what he did and even bother uttering the words, that God forgave him. Shene'emar, as the Pasuk says, Vayomer Shmuel al Shaul, Machar, tomorrow, Ata uvanecha imi, you will be with me. That doesn't just mean dead. I'm Rabbi Yochanan, imi, b'mechitzasi. You're going to be dead, but with me, meaning in whatever Shmuel's eternal reward is. So you take this very dark expression, Machar, Ata uvanecha imi, and the rabbi saw that, wait a second, what's Shmuel really saying? He's saying, you're going to die, but death can expiate. And your death, because you're deeply ashamed of what you did in Nov, and you massacred all those innocent people. You're so ashamed you can't even talk about it. You can't even say the words, Urim Betumim, Machara Tov Vanecha Imi. Yeah, Daniel.
The Rambam is very clear that every single, like, Aviti Pashati, it's got to be specifically named. So by its absence, I can infer that he felt such terrible guilt and trepidation about his status. I mean, that seems to fly in the face of everything we know about Shuva.
Right. So the Rambam probably would not accept this. I mean, certainly not accept it in terms of fulfilling the mitzvah. Bidui. So this is a more charitable way of looking at it. You know, sometimes, you know, people are just so... so mortified by something, they just can't even, you know, they can't even mention it. And you're right. You know, for the Rambam to meet the standards of Bidui, this is not sufficient. But the Gemara is taking a more charitable look at not what Shaul says, but for, you know, what he doesn't say. A slightly more radical tradition. Rabbi Yochanan Omer, Amar Shmuel is Shaul. Imatash Shomea Latzati, I want you to listen to my advice. This is sort of the subtext to the conversation. Imatash Shomea Latzati Lin Hobacharev, Utehe Mitatat Haparalacha, Vyehe Goralcha Imid Makom Shani Shmisha. So he basically says to him, don't try to run, but if you go tomorrow bravely to your death, on the field of battle against the Plishtim, that will be the expiation. V'shama Shaul atzato, and Shaul follows this advice. V'nafal v'charev, and he knows and he goes to battle knowing he's going to die. Hu v'chol banav, his three sons. Shenem arayam of Shaul shoshet banav. Lama, why did he do this? For redemption. Sheheichalko im Shmuel hanavi lati labo shenemar. Same clause. Machar atav benecha imi, mahu imi, Rabbi Yochanan omer imi b'mechitzasi. So basically, the way that the Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer imagines the conversation is Shaul wants to know whether he should run. And Shmuel says, don't run, don't hide, go to battle, you'll be killed, but in your death, you'll be expiated, you'll be atoned. And that's what happens. And he goes with his whole family. And they die. They die in the field of battle. We'll talk about the circumstances of their death. And the death is itself an expiation. So again, in these two different ways, either because of his shame over what he had done, or because of his willingness to face death courageously, there's this dual rabbinic tradition that actually, in this incredibly dark speech that Shmuel was giving to Shaul, Machar atav benecha imi, he was actually hinting towards the possibility for posthumous redemption. Very interesting idea. Okay, so let's now just very quickly, chapter 29 is very short, so let's take a look. Remember, David is now aligned with the Plishtim, so he has what you'd call in the field a dilemma, right? Because up until now, you know, the after-battle action reports that he's giving to Achish are total fabrications, but nobody is alive to tell the story. So David says, oh, I raided Yehuda today, and he's bringing back, you know, for Achish, the price is right, he's bringing him back all this loot, so Achish isn't asking too many questions, right? But now the Plishtim and the Jews are going to war, and David has been asked by Achish to serve as his personal bodyguard. Because, you know, the trust is at this point so implicit between the two of them. So David, you know, how is he going to handle this situation, right? So here we go. Vayikbetu plishtim ekol machaneh mafeka. So the plishtim gathered in Afek, Yisrael chonim ba'ayim asher b'Yisrael. Camps aligned facing each other. So neit plishtim obrim le'meyogu alafim, they come in their hundreds and their thousands. V'david v'anashav obrim ba'achonayim achish. Notice that Achish, who's the king, right, so he's the highest ranking officer on the field of battle. Notice where he is, but we're not, right? He's behind everybody, okay? This is not the Acharai. But Yomru Sarei Plishtim. So the Sarei Plishtim now for the first time get wind of the fact that David has defected from Israel to the Plishtim. So they say to Achish, what is going on here? Why are there 600 Jews lining up with us? He exaggerates. We know David was there, because the Navi, we studied this last week, 4 months and 2 days. So Achish says he's been with me for years. You know, he defected years ago. You know, this was kind of a state secret. Never said anything about it. V'lo matzati bo me'uma, and I want you to know, I have never found anything that is remotely questionable about him. Miyom naflo ad hayom hazeh. Right, from the day that he defected until this day. The people get angry at Achish. They're very skeptical of this situation. Rightly so. Get rid of him. Send him back. We don't trust him to go to war with us. So that he should not be against us in battle. And they make a very incisive point. They say, look, if David wanted to reestablish himself in the good graces of Shaul, what would be the best way for him to do it? By killing all of us. So even if he hasn't done anything until this point, if he's privately harboring some idea of returning to his people, this would be his golden opportunity. Halo ze David asher yanu lo bamecholot. Don't forget who you're dealing with. You're dealing with a ferocious warrior about whom the women of Israel sang, right, this is a refrain, Hikash Shaul balafav, if Shaul smote thousands, David berivivotav. David was tens of thousands. Remember, that was the chant that sent Shaul off into the dark space. So Achish has no choice, but he's got to go to David and say, look, I've got domestic politics that I need to worry about here. Vayikra Achish al David vayomer elav chai Hashem ki asharata v'tov be'enai. I find your integrity beyond reproach. Tzeitcha vo'acha iti b'machana ki lo matzati v'cha ra'a miyom bo'acha ilai ad hayom hazeh. I have found absolutely nothing to be concerned about, but not everybody feels that way. Uvenei hasranim, plishti officers, lo tov ata. Ve'atashuv lech b'shalom, lo tasa ra b'enei sarnei plishtim. We cannot antagonize the sarnei plishtim. The plishtim had a very complex governmental structure. Remember, it was really a confederacy of different cities. Achish is the king of Gath. He's the highest ranking officer there. But he's not a despot. He doesn't have total authority. And there's politics here. And so he says to David, look, we can't alienate them, and we'll just have to cede to their demands. Vayomer David al Achish. Now David can't, you know, he can't say, well, in that case, I'll see you later. That would obviously raise suspicions. So David's got to protest. Vayomer David al Achish, ki me asiti? Why are you throwing me out? U'me'matzata be'abdecha miyom asher hayita lefanecha hayom hazeh. Have you found anything wrong with me? Have I not been loyal? Kilo avov enochamti b'oivei Adoni HaMelech, so that you are not trusting me to fight your enemies. And Achish again, he asserts it and reaffirms. Vayan Achish vayomer el David yadati ki tov ata b'enai kimalach Elohim. You are like an angel of God in my eyes. Ah, but it's not me. They said they're not going to have it. And therefore, Hashkem Baboker, Vavdei Adonecha, Sherba Uitach, Vishkamtem Baboker, V'or Lacham Aleichu, you'll have to go back in the morning. So, Vayashkem David Huvan Hashab Alechat Baboker, Lashuv Alaretz Vishtim, Plishtim Alu Yisrael. So David leaves the field of battle. So David, of course, here you see, you know, hand of providence, so to speak, you know, extricates David from what would have been a kind of an impossible situation. Here's what I find very interesting about this. Not, you know, the fact that David gets out of it at the last minute, that's sort of the providential piece of this. But what's really fascinating about David is that you see here that he has an extraordinary personal charisma. And here's what I mean. Listen to the words that Achish uses in describing David. He calls him, he says, not only are you Tov, be Ashar, you know, that would have been enough. But he says, in my eyes, you're like a malach Elokim. That's strong language. But David has this impact on people. Right? He has this profound charisma about him. Right? That's the reason that the ladies of Israel said in the first place, Hikash Shaul Balafab B'David B'Ruvavotab. He was always more than just the sum of his actions. There's something about him that captivates. And that's the really interesting thing. So, you know, it's like the Kennedy-Nixon debate, right? Where the people listening on the radio think Nixon wins, the people watching TV, you know, think Kennedy wins, because there's this incredible charisma to the guy. So listen to this dialogue, right? Achish has just totally fallen for David, right? He's captivated by him. And the Tzarnei Plishtim, who have no relationship with him, they don't know him at all, they're saying, like, look, what are you doing? Right, even if he's been loyal up until this point, if he would ever want to go back, this is now his golden opportunity. All he's got to do is to stick it to us on the battlefield, right, when we least expect it, and then he's back in the good graces of, you know, the Jewish people. That's a perfectly rational argument. But why do they, Achish is a fool? I don't think Achish is a fool. But he wasn't intelligent enough to realize that. I don't think it's a matter of intelligence. It's the people who know him, people who know David, right, they're drawn to him, right? There's something about him that suspends people's critical thinking in that way and gets them to think about him in a very different way. Yeah?
I think it's almost like he endears himself to the people at the top of the system. You know, whether it's Shmuel, Shaul, Achish, but there's sometimes the people that are rung below, some of the subordinates, he may struggle with them.
It's a really good observation, because remember, his men were always saying to him, why don't you just kill Shaul already, right?
And his own father, his own relatively powerless father, you know, didn't see the greatness of him, was
far from it, right. Far from it. So, you know, he has this very, there's something about David that's probably lost for us a little bit just in reading about him, right, in terms of the way that he impacted people, the way that people reacted to him. So Achish is a very good example, especially in light of the fact that, and here's a good opportunity to bring back, remember, this was not the first round with Achish. David had, remember, showed up the first time, and, you know, David is at that point alone, he doesn't have 600 people with him, and, you know, they're about to sort of hand him over, and then David has this whole insanity ploy that he uses, and Achish says, you know, have Haser li mishugayim, and basically lets David walk, right? So there should have been something suspicious. You know, this isn't like the first time that he's showing up, and yet Achish isn't able to sort of maintain his objectivity when it comes to David. David has, like I said, like I think a really important charisma about him. Okay, so here we are. Obviously, you know, the scene is set for the battle. We have two chapters left. The final chapter is very brief. It's Siggy, what you were waiting for, the grisly end, and it's quite grisly. The penultimate chapter, which we'll take a look at next week, is David is sent home. So remember, the Plishtim are going to be fighting against the Jews. We already know that the outcome of that battle has been preordained. That's what Shmuel was telling Shaul about. But what does going home exactly mean for David? What's he going to do? So you can imagine, knowing David, that he's not just going to, like, you know, put on daytime TV. So his actions now become very significant in the context of the full decline of Shaul, and now the fact that, you know, space is being cleared for David to rise to the monarchy. So that's where we're headed. So we'll take a look at what David does next week. That's a more lengthy chapter, chapter 30. Then the final chapter, chapter 31, which is the, you know, the ultimate death and defeat of Shaul on the field of battle. But again, bearing in mind what we saw tonight, this tradition from the Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer that Shaul goes to battle specifically to die, to expiate himself of these terrible sins, that this is, instead of running away, that this is in some sense an act of courage, so that he can be, as Shmuel said to him, Machara tau v'necha imi, am Rabbi Yochanan b'mechitasi, that he can achieve a measure of redemption, and at least in the next world experience a measure of expiation for all that went wrong over the course of the last 15 chapters or so. Okay, so we'll hold it up there, pick it up next week.